All right, welcome back everybody to our learning at Shari. We are less than 1 week away from Zman Matan Torah Seinu, the Yom Tov of the giving of the Torah. We are learning L'Zeicha Nishmas as well as L'Iloi Nishmas, Miriam Fron, Miriam Bas Chaim Yitzchak, Allah HaShalom, may her neshama have a continuous aliyah in the merit of our Torah learning, not in the merit of the learning, but hopefully in the merit of trying to be better people, more yashar, Jews, Ovdei Hashem, who have the clarity and the dveikus and the moon and the Ribbon Shalom. It's interesting, someone emailed me, I didn't have time to reply back to the email yet, that she listens to my shiurim online, I didn't have time to reply yet, and could I give some chizuk in Amuna? So it's a very bad question, but we have been working on Amuna in this class for how many years, 2.5 years? The whole class is working on Amuna. It's an avoda of a lifetime. So I think what I'm really going to do is direct her to listen to the series, which is online, because it's mamish, an avoda of an entire life. So tying in, I have to figure out exactly what to say. I don't want to say, you know, I can't help you, but you're working your whole life to acquire Amuna. So I just want to quote something from the Rabbi Tzemachis, but that relates to Amunah and belief that the Ribbono Shel Olam is running the entire show. Also, it's related to Korach. Here we go into the book of Bamidbar. Shamshon Fal Hirsch says, the third book of the Torah, which is Vayikra, presents us with the ideal of what the nation should be. The fourth book of the Torah presents us as the nation as they really are. We have the reality of the people as they are versus what we really should be. Welcome. I just saw your mother today. Okay, Rabbi Tzemachis can turn any ordinary parasha lesson into something applicable to your life. A student, apparently, or someone who learned with her, is being quoted. Her teaching on Parshas Korach impacted my life. Rabbi Tzemachis explained, Korach did not receive punishment because he was jealous. Korach received punishment because he didn't ask for help. I'm going to repeat it, it's a very important line. Korach did not receive din, strict justice. He wasn't punished because he was jealous. He was punished. He received din, strict justice, because he did not ask for help. Hashem made Korach with a trait of jealousy. Welcome, welcome, ladies. Hashem made, I'm glad you found this. They were closing doors, opening doors. I didn't know what was going on. Welcome, Bishus Rabbitson. Hashem made Korach. Listen to this. It's so important. We're coming up to, you know, this relates to the last of the Seres Hadibros. We're coming up to the Yom Tov of Shavuos, and the last of the Seres Hadibros is Lo Tachmar. So, Lo Tirtzach, I know what to do. Lo Tinof, I know what to do. Lo Signov, I know what to do. Lo Sana Berech, Eitchak, I know what to do. And it comes to Lo Tachmar. And how can the Torah tell me to, control my emotions. Okay, tell me don't kill. Tell me don't kidnap. Tell me don't do adultery. But tell me not to covet what my friend has. That's the tenth of the Seres Hadibros. Hashem made Korach as a jealous person. That's what Hani Malchus taught. Hashem made each of us the way we are. The reason I thought to bring it to you is because it touches upon laziness. We've been talking about ants for the past 2 weeks and conquering the mita of atzlus, laziness. Hashem made us each the way we are. Everyone has different faults. She says we have anger, laziness. Some people excel in certain ones, have less of another one. Anger, we don't need to all say what our greatest weaknesses are. Anger, laziness, jealousy, yelling at our children. We often need to ask Hashem for help. We need to say it and we need to mean it. Rabbi Tzemachis told us the mashal of a dot. So that teaching alone is piercing. Korach was not punished because he was Korach. It's unbelievable. That's not how we look at Korach. Korach was punished because he didn't say, Hashem, help me change who I am. Tzemachis told us the mashal of a doctor who didn't ask for help. There was a hospital that was short of staff for the night shift. They could only have one doctor for this night shift. They told this young doctor he would be the only one during the night shift. That he was told if he got overwhelmed or needed help, he should call, ask for help. They'll send additional staff. He worked all through the night. He helped patient after patient. It was very busy. He was running from one patient to another. He was understaffed. He didn't call for help. A patient died. He was taken to court. He told the court, I don't understand why I'm here. I did everything I could to keep the hospital running that night. The judge told him he wasn't at fault for trying to help the patients. He was at fault because he didn't pick up the phone and say, I need reinforcements. So the Rebbetzin would tell us to ask Hashem for help. I'm talking to myself. We need to go to a remote place, call out to Hashem. This relates to what we read last week in the Sefer. If you recall, one of the last things we said is go to a quiet place and say, who am I? How did I get here? There's a creator who made me here. Go to a quiet place. Tell him what you're struggling with. Say it out loud. Hashem, tell him, you made me this way. Whether, what did she say? Anger, kas, laziness, atzlus, jealousy, kinan, tachmo, the desire, yelling at our children. You made me. Ask him to change you. I asked her, so this certain Talmud said, isn't it the same as Shemona Esrei? You can ask for forgiveness and recite your sin. She says, it's not the same. If you don't confess in this world, when we go to Shemayim, listen to this, Hashem will put us on a pedestal in front of everyone. I mean, you have to confess everything in front of everyone. Do it down here. Go to a quiet place where it's just you and Hashem and say it out loud before it's before the Beis Din Shamala. She turned to me, she grabbed my hand, she said, I'll be your friend. That changed my life. After that shiur, whenever I was struggling with something, her words came back to me. I would turn around the struggle, I would turn the concept of struggle around. I know that I have to turn to Hashem. So I think that it's unbelievable in regard to any mitzvah, whether it's atzlus, whether it's emunah, if a person chalila struggles with a lack of emunah or a doubt at a certain time of life, whether they struggle with atzlus and they should go see the ants, whether they struggle with anger, any mitzvah that she brings up that is negative, Korach had jealousy. Why should my one cousin be the prince and the other cousin should be the Kohen Gadol and I'm nothing, I'm next in line? I wasn't punished for the jealousy, for his feelings. He's punished because he didn't say, this is how you made me. So you can change me. It's unbelievable. Okay, that's one thing. Any questions or comments on that, Nakuda? No? Okay. The other thing I wanted to follow up with, Sarah, which is something that we started to talk about last week, but I'm already thirsty. We started to talk last week a little bit about questions. Talking about questions last week. So I thought that it was, we discussed a little bit after class, a little more, thought it was important just to clarify it a little bit further. So I was listening to a shiur last week online on Vayu Torah, Rav Shai Shechter. So he told over a story that Rav Asher Weiss tells, Rav Asher Weiss Shlita, one of the Gedolei Poskim in Eretz Yisrael. He's actually the posek for Shari Tzedek Medical Center. Anyway, so Rav Asher Weiss tells over this story. It was during the war, during the Holocaust. I believe Rav Shachter said it was the Kovno Ghetto. You know, my hearing can't rely on it 100%, but I'm like 99% sure it was the Kovno Ghetto. So even if it wasn't, you'll hear the story in a minute, the rest of the story here. So there was one Jew who 6 months before Pesach realized Pesach is coming. And he started to save wheat kernels. He sewed a hem in his coat or his pants, whatever it was on. He's going to save up the wheat kernels. For 6 months, the mysterious nefesh, to save the wheat kernels, comes to before Pesach, and he manages to bake matzah. He bakes matzah, whether they're kosher. He bakes matzah. The SS, everyone in the ghetto knew that this Jew is being most nefesh for matzah. And before Pesach, the SS found him, and they smashed the matzahs to crumbs, and they smashed out all his teeth. So it's a double punishment. The matzah are entirely broken, that he saved up the wheat kernels for 6 months. It doesn't have teeth to chew, even if there was matzah. So he went to ask a shayla of the Rav in the Kovna Gera. The Rav in the Kovna Gera sees him coming. He's bloody. He's carrying these broken, crumbled matzahs. Is he possibly going to tell this yid? Everybody knew he was saving for 6 months. So the yid comes. I want to shayla. He says, I saved up. So I don't have matzah. I have crumbs. I don't have teeth to chew. He was Hasidish. Can I be matir my neder and ikibracht? Can I soak the crumbs in liquid, so water, so they'll be soft enough for me to eat them? That was the shaila. The point of the story Rav Asher Weiss said during a particular shiur, Rav Shachter was in attendance, is that sometimes the questions in Yahadus, in Judaism, in our history, are more important than the answers. This is a flip side of question, not questioning the Baal Hashem, but questioning how can I be a better Ever Hashem. The fact that the Jew at all was asking such a question, Rav Shach says he doesn't know what the Psak was, what the Rav told the person, but that he says that's not the point. The point is that the Jew wants to know, what does Hashem want from me? Shachler said something interesting. He says it bothers him when people look over Sfarim of Shailas that they asked Rabbanim during the time of the war. They would put Shailas into Rabbanim during the time of the Holocaust. And he says people look at those Sfarim and they analyze the Psak was right, the Psak was wrong. He says that's not the point of the Sfarim. He says I'm sure the Baal Shalom was very proud of every Jew and that it's not not whether they gave the right psak or the wrong psak. It's the fact that Jews, in the most Gehenim-like conditions that we cannot even fathom, were asking shaylas. They had questions. What were their questions? What does Hashem want from me? And that really relates to what we spoke about last week. If you ask Ayaka first, remember we said the first question in the Torah is Ayaka, where are you? What is Hashem asking Adam? Not where are you physically, not where are you geographically, where are you spiritually? So it's asking ourselves, where am I? And now what is the Ribbono Shel Olam want from me? Not challenging God, so to speak, because when it comes to Ribbono Shel Olam, there are many questions that we can't answer down here with our finite vision. But there are questions that have tremendous value and importance. And these are the questions of Shachler said that in Jewish history, he said there are some questions that are more important than the answers. And he's talking about these type of questions when the Jew wants to know what to do, as impossible as conditions are. This man, this Kadosh HaBekadosh, wants to know, could he eat gebrachs in order to somehow eat the crumbs of his matzah? So I wanted to follow up with you. Yes?
I think Kleisenberger says that the greatest miracle of the Holocaust was that Jews still believed.
I'm not forgetting
your
Sean, you have to tell
me,
I can't hear.
The Kleisenberger Rebbe said that the greatest miracle of the Holocaust was that Jews still believed.
Talking about Amunah.
Talking
about Amunah, which is what I said in the beginning, that this what we've been working here for 2.5 years. Mamish, everything that we discuss here is all a tangent of Amunah. The greatest, that's really what Shach was saying, the greatest miracles that people are asking such shaylas. It doesn't matter, he said, what the answer is. He says, people pick up the Sefer today and they analyze if the psak was right or the psak was wrong. Al pi halacha. He says, really? Someone in such a condition is asking halachic shayla. So sometimes there are questions that are more important than answers. So there are different types of questions in life. We have to be sure we ask the right kind of questions. What does a Kosh Baruch Hu want from me? What is my tafkid here to the best of our ability with Das Torah? What can I do? You know, my daughter came in this afternoon. It was so cute. She says, I want to surprise you. Kind of Baruch Hashem, there's a house next door to us that was sold to from people, but they have not moved in yet. It's been vacant for a few months now. She said there are very nice flowers growing. She's graduating 8th grade. Can I know, is it stealing if I cut the flowers? Nobody lives in this house. They're not planning to even move into the house the way it is right now. But she cut the flowers. So I said, I don't know. So I asked another neighbor who knew their number, and I tracked them down, and I asked permission if we could cut down flowers. It's so beautiful. I was beautiful that she thought to ask or no, but sometimes there are questions that we ask that have tremendous value. And you ask a different rav, you get different psak, asay lecha rav, everyone has their own rav, but the point is that, yes, we must ask questions. We have to know what kind, and they have tremendous value. Okay. Anything more on that? Any other thoughts? No? Okay. So with that, let's go into the Sefer, please. Okay. Page 58 in the second Sefer. Oh, everyone knows because of the bookmarks. Okay. Okay. In this manner, you develop in a structured way the clear awareness that nothing happens on its own. Then the question, here we go, then the question will naturally scream out, how did I get here? And further, how is there even an entity called I? So last time we spoke about Hani Malchus Allah Shalom, and she would do this hispodidus. She went out into the fields. She spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a very clear way. And today we added something very important onto there. You must sit calmly for a minute or two and contemplate and realize this really is a very serious question. So the question of how did I get here? How is there an entity called I is a very serious question. Of course, we have to realize that the I of myself is nothing in regard to the I of the Anochi Hashem Elokecha. We already spoke about the Lo Sach mode, which is the fifth, the final one of the Aseres HaDibros. The first of the Aseres HaDibros, of course, is the Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the I of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Chana, it was you who sent me a very good email, right? Someone wrote the Rebbe a letter, and he said, I have problems. I'm not successful in business. I'm a failure. I don't know, all the other things. I feel like a no good neck. What should I do? So the Rebbe took the man's letter. He circled and read every I with which the man started his sentence, and he sent it back. And he said, this is your problem. You have to sometimes remove the I to recognize the Anochi Hashem Elokecha. You sit calmly for a minute. So when we say, how is there an entity called I? Certainly we're here, we exist, we all have a tafka, but put it into perspective that vis-a-vis the Ribbono Shel Olam, son of Avraham Avinu Anochi, Afer Ve'efer, Anochi, my Anochi, is Afer Ve'efer compared to the Anochi of Hashem Elokecha. You must have calmed me for a minute or two and contemplated, realize this is really a very serious question. The proof is that many people have still not arrived at the true answer. One second. Why don't I just read you? Yeah, okay. Many people have not arrived at the true answer. It's wonderful. We know of the answer from tradition and from our intellect, but deep in the heart, it is not totally clear. So is something emanating... is something emanating from the point where you know it and your father told you and your mother told you and their father and their told you, do you really feel like this? Do you really live like this? Deep in your heart, is it very clear to you what the emes, what the reality, what the metzias is? Some people never... We're working to get there. Everybody's always working to get there. Some people, it's a very big struggle. So Rav Elimelech Biderman tells the following story. One second. A primary method, Rav Biderman, Shlita, primary method to increase emunah is to speak about emunah. Ha'amanti ki adaber. The Rabbi of Lachowitz used to say, ha'amanti ki adaber. By the way, Henny Malachowitz would say the same thing. It's in the book. Ha'amanti ki adaber. I will speak about it so much, ki adaber, ha'amanti. I will come to the point of having amuna. In addition to speaking about amuna, we need to internalize the lesson of amuna and genuinely live with amuna. And that's really what the Mechaber says right here. The proof is many people have not arrived at the true answer. So it's not just us saying it. There are people who have not arrived at the true answer. They know the answer from tradition. They know the answer from intellect. But deep in the heart, it's not totally clear. And this is what's the avodah of a lifetime. It's not avodah of a lifetime to say that I believe in Hashem. Every Torah Jew believes in Hashem. The avodah of the lifetime is not because you have a mesorah of it, but because you really live with that faith. Like the Rebbetzin said, the Klosenberger, Zecher Tzadik Livracha said, the greatest miracle of the Churban Europa is that there are Jews who still have emunah, the Ribbono Shel Olam. They didn't have it from their mesorah, because you could say, well, look what good my mesorah did me. They had it because they really believed that there was a Ribbono Shel Olam. They knew it in here, not just up here. Hamanti ki adaber. I believe because I speak about believing. In addition to speaking about Amunah, we need to internalize the lesson of Amunah. By the way, it sounds like I'm reading from the Sefer, but I'm really reading from a Biderman. We need to internalize the lesson of Amunah and begin to genuinely live with Amunah. Otherwise, we could speak about Amunah and remain the same as before. Which Sefer did I read it brought down in? Maybe it's in Henny Malchus, I don't know, that if you davened... Yeah, the Besh, the Baal Shem Tov says, if you daven today the way you davened yesterday, so it's not tefillah. If your tefillah is the prayer, it's the exact same as it was today, so it's not prayer. So too with amunah. We can remain the same in amunah. We're really not growing anywhere. Listen to this. He gives a very good example. A Baal Darshan, a public speaker, was once speaking about the terrible trait of ka'as. Rambam says, for all midos, you should be middle of the road. Person should be mida benoni. Except for ka'as, you should always be all the way at the extreme of not to get angry. Everyone in the audience was inspired. The speaker supported his lessons with midrashim, musar, true life example. Even if you have a good reason to be angry, he hollered, it's never an excuse. You must control your anger at all times. There should never be a moment where you lose yourself. So this is, it's a fire and brimstone speech. Someone walked up to the podium at that exact minute to bring him a cup of coffee. The man wasn't careful. He placed the coffee on the slanted stender. The coffee spilled and the speaker's suit was ruined. You're such a fool, the speaker shouted at him angrily. Why can't you be more careful? This isn't the first time. You always do things like this. He carried on and on. He could not control his anger. The same speaker who 10 seconds before was saying there's never an excuse and bringing all sorts of sources, midrashim, musar, true life examples. So Rabbi Biderman says the story reminds us there is a gap between speaking about something and internalizing something. And that's right, we're mamash ringer 2.5 years. How could I be mechazik someone in an email about amunah? I don't mean to minimize the question. It's an excellent question. But it's a vote of a whole lifetime to internalize what you speak about. When it comes to amunah, it's the greatest nisayon. Right? Yeah. Okay, so amuna and bitachon leishib is that amuna is on an intellectual level. Well, when someone comes and spills coffee on your suit, where's your level of bitachon at that moment? So it's nice, it's easy to say we should never be angry. But then I'm standing in front of 500 people and you just spill coffee on me and I start Okay, so that's bitachon. Very nice.
I don't remember where I heard it from, but it was a fabulous way of illustrating the difference between emunah and bitachon. It's like if you see a tightrope walker who's...
If you see...
A tightrope walker. Someone who's like an acrobat, someone who's very well trained, someone like a Harry Houdini, someone who, like, you know, they're a performer and they are talented and they can do it. They say they can go on the tightrope across the Grand Canyon. Do you believe that they could go on the tightrope across the Grand Canyon? So that's emunah that you could believe them. Bitachon is letting them push you in a wheelbarrow.
Bitachon is?
Letting that person push you in the wheelbarrow across the tightrope. On the tightrope.
Or going on their shoulders.
Or going on their shoulders. That you believe they can do it, but when push
letting
comes to
that
shove,
person push
would you let that person carry you? Emunah is believing it. Bitachon
is doing
them carry
it. Okay.
Actualizing.
Yeah.
That's like an extreme example, maybe.
But I think it helps you understand the difference.
But we're in difficult situations, and that's.
So bitachon is putting the passive emunah into active experience. I believe that's what you're saying. It's taking what you passively, intellectually know and applying it actively in different instances in your life. That's what you're both saying.
That particular mashal is because you're relying on a human being.
Right. True. Okay.
So that's why, right. Right. It's not really...
A good comparison, okay. Because you're relying on a person. Yeah. So it's so funny.
Right, yeah. But I think...
There have been accidents already on tight ropes. But
right.
when it comes to Bono Shalom, the Emuna, we know Hashem could do anything.
You know it, but...
1 second, ladies, just a minute. So it's interesting you bring this up because you see the same thing really in tefillah. Bear with me for a minute. We know Hashem could do everything. Everyone here... And anyone listening to the show online knows Hashem could do everything or we wouldn't be at this table. The question is, where does Rabbi Tachon come into place? So Rav Shimshon Pinchas explains about this in regard to tefillah. You demonstrate emunah through tefillah. How? Besides the fact that you daven to Hashem. By asking for things. How so? You only ask for things you really believe can actually happen. He says, Rav Pinchas Atzal says, nobody asks for 3 arms. Or he says an eye in the back of your head. It would be very helpful to have an eye back in your head. It would be very helpful to have 3 arms. No, I told it to, we were in Shul on Shabbos, Robertson Willig was, can I know, holding 2 plates and a baby on her lap and 1 little child in front of her and they're both trying to eat at the same time and she's trying to balance everything. So I said, could I hold a plate for you? Can I help you? So I said, we wish we had 3 arms. It's never going to happen. So I said, we started talking. I told her if Pinchas speaks about. But the point is what Pinchas says is if you don't daven for something, even if you know intellectually it could happen, it means, and you ladies are giving it the term bitachon, that you don't bitachon that Hashem will do for you. Does anyone here daven for 3 arms? Why? Why don't you? 1 second, please. Because it's very useful to have 3 arms, but I know it's never going to happen. So if a person comes to the point where they stop davening for something, even if they know Hashem could do it, it means they don't really believe Hashem will send the Yeshua. Why? Because if I really believed in it, I would storm Shemayim till I got the Yeshua, because Hashem could do whatever he wants. Yes?
I think davening for 3 arms goes against the Bria.
Talk loud, I can't hear.
It
it's not your fault.
Goes against the Bria. Hashem created us, man, to be 2 arms, 2 legs, the way we are, and that's how it is. And
right.
That's a basic acceptance of that's how Hashem wants it.
Right, of course. But it would still be... No, wait a second. So you could say, Rachman Adzan Chalil V'chas, if somebody's sick, La'olinu, should never be a situation, but that's how Hashem wants it to be, that's the Bria, so why should I daven for change?
But Hashem is a rofe. He's not going to create another arm.
I know.
Well, what about Chas V'Shalom, someone who lost an arm, won't ask for it to grow back?
Right.
Because they know.
Right, right.
Although with stem cells and stuff like that.
Isn't this the difference of Teva and... Not Teva, and Teva and Nace, I guess, where Hashem could do either one, Teva or Nace, but I'm not saying we should never ask for a Nace.
But sometimes the things we ask for are borderline Nissen v'Niflaos because we believe Hashem could do it.
But they're usually within Teva, like usually most of the things we're asking for, there is a precedent. Someone is sick and is miraculously cured, and the doctors don't understand why, but it isn't usually like. Hashem, can I have the tree that money grows on? Like, Hashem could do anything, yeah, but it's
right.
It's kind of not in our...
Let's say they yidden by Yam Suf, Hashem's going to change Teva for them. Okay, we know Nachshon Ben Aminadav jumped in, but the Gemara says, so to 37a, while he's going through the water, he is davening. So why just not jump into the water? No, you're going to jump because it's Teva, because the sea's not going to split for me. But if you're davening, it indicates, you know, Hashem can do this, and he can change Teva.
Hashem said to Esau, you know, he said to, you know, to go. So it's not, you know, something that, you know, that was like a sea boy. He didn't just jump in like at random. Also, that
something
that there's a
day
in Chazal that
you
don't
that you
shouldn't
daven.
No, and also you shouldn't
daven.
That watch,
honey? She's saying in Chazal, isn't there a thing where you're not supposed to daven for a niece?
Correct.
Are we starting another one?
Right.
Okay, ladies, ladies, listen, okay, please listen. First of all, a couple things about not asking for Hashem to change Teva. We do ask Hashem to sometimes change Teva. Rachel Imenu, for example, now you're going to play devil's advocate and tell me back that she's one of the emails. I know, but they set the precedent for Klal Yisrael and Paraglam, and she's not having children. She's very distressed. Listen, says Yaakov, you know, it's your problem. You don't have kids. It's not my problem. I already have Rashi says this, the Ramban says this, the Medrash says this. I already have children with my other wives. You're the one who's on Akara, not me. Later on the parasha, it says, Vayishma, Elah Elokim, Vayizkar Elokim es Rachal, Vayishma Elah Elokim, Vayivtach es Rachma, Vayizkar Elokim es Rachal, it's Midas Hadin. Vayishma Elah Elokim, Targum Unkla says Hashem accepted her prayers, she daven. Excuse me. Targum Unkla says Hashem accepted her prayers and she davened. But Alpi Teva Chazal tells Rachel Imenu is not destined to have children. She could not have children. She was a barren woman. She davened. Yishmael Elokim. She davened. Ramban says something unbelievable when she realized she can't rely on Yaakov Avinu anymore. She took matters into her own hands. You could go look up. It's unbelievable. She says, "You daven for me," and he says to her, "I'm not like my father who davened for my mother. I already have children. You don't have children." When she realized she had to storm Shemaim, says the Ramban, she went and davened. And in fact, she got the results that she davened for. Vishmael Elokim Din, according to strict justice, this woman, this one of the Akaris Habayis, should not have had children. Vayishmael Elokim, Hashem listened, accepted her prayers, says Uncles, Vayiftach Es Rachma. And he opened up a room. So Teva was changed. Teva was changed. Yes.
Isn't there... I'm not sure if it's a Medrash or a Chazal, that Hashem has keys to certain things, and one of them, I think, is Parnassa, and one of them is children.
Correct, yes.
So there are certain things we are supposed to daven to Hashem, and having children, a barren woman or men, you know, that's fine, that either way, that is something that not whether we know exactly how Hashem changes it, I mean... We're not supposed to ask if someone's pregnant. We're not supposed to ask for it to be a boy or a girl if they're already pregnant. That's not usually something Hashem is changing.
Okay.
Like there are certain things that are in, I think, the parameter of tefillah that even though it's not really...
Okay,
a
I want to go
it,
on.
It isn't it?
I understand what you ladies are saying. You're saying that we...
Hashem to benigva change the tefillah. The Akriyas Yom Hashem did it, but... That's not something, this is something that, it's a nace, but it's a nace that it's not benigla, that, you know.
Okay. I do understand what you're all saying, that we don't daven for Hashem to change Teva because we know it's never going to happen. But we still take the point of Rav Shimshon Pinkus. If we don't daven for something, it means, that's his bottom line, that you don't think Hashem could do it. If a person stops davening for a Yeshua, that can somehow be explained through Derech HaTeva. Take cochlear implants. Maybe they would have said, wow, this is how Hashem made deaf people, but Derech HaTeva. So we're going to stop working on it. It could never happen. And we'll stop the efforts and the scientific funding and whoever was praying. I'm sure there were people davening for this. It seemed so unbelievable. You would think it would never happen. And millions, is that something you would think to daven for? Is that something you would think to daven for? The fact that we daven for something means in some way Hashem could cause it to happen. Whether it's through Teva, now you don't say Teva, now it's a machokas maybe. Are cochlear implants Teva? Or are they? Lamala mina teva. So I guess it depends who you ask, and I guess it depends what the shkav is. But through teva, Hashem can change certain things. The bottom line is, because I would like to try and move on a little bit, but the bottom line is, if you daven for something, it means you think Hashem can do it. And if you don't daven for something, it means you think Hashem cannot do it. Hani Malchus would tell her children when she was, when they would get married, they would daven for an apartment, enough money to buy an apartment. She would say, don't stop at an apartment. Daven that Hashem should give you a brand new nice house. So it's so interesting. I was talking to Rabbi Tzinvillik from Beis Medrash Woodmere. Her sister-in-law is Yochaved Malchus, the oldest Malchus daughter. So she told me, by the way, she just had twins. One is named after her mother, Henny, and one is named after Henny's mother, who is just Nifteras. So twin girls. So she said she's exactly like her mother. So the oldest daughter wanted a sewing machine. It's very expensive. So her mother, Yochaved, told her, so daven for the sewing machine. And the Rebbetzin said, somehow, some way, it ended up that someone gave them a sewing machine. So I understand that Hashem's not going to make us grow three arms, even though it would be very helpful. And he's not going to make us have three eyes, even though it would be very helpful. But somehow he made deaf people who are mamish able to hear and speak like normal people. It's a nes min hashamayim. So in some way Hashem does change teva for us, whether it's with the times, whether it's through science, whatever you want to call it. At the point where you stop davening, I think that there's a very firm point. Again, I'm going with Shem Pinkus, this is not my own ha'ara. When you stop davening, it means Hashem can do it. That's what you believe. So then there's a munah and bitachon. A munah is what I know intellectually, and bitachon is, if I'm putting my passive thought into active prayer, then I believe Hashem could send this Yeshua, no matter how impossible it seems. Yeah, one more point.
But I don't think it says that Sari may know Kazan, because by her it was really changing.
Who, Rachel? Rachel, you mean?
Sarah.
Oh.
She had no womb. I think Sarah had no womb.
That's how you collect my Hashem Dabar. But she doesn't, I mean, she didn't, I don't think it says in Chazal, unless I'm wrong, that she davened, because by her it would have been, and it was,
That was different because Hashem promised Avraham.
That's what I was just going to say. Hashem promised Avraham, and Kibi Yitzchak Kar Lechazar. Yitzchak was named Yitzchak even before Sarah was informed of the upcoming birth, and he was really fulfilling a promise to Avraham, the Av HaMangoyim. So perhaps we could look like that. That's an interesting ha'ara. Do we see any evidence that Sarah daven? Interesting. Well, Rashi does tell us that Avram was tafel to her in Ruach HaKodesh, so she was clearly on a very high level, but you bring up an interesting point. But what
she didn't believe that it could
what?
The things that she said, it seemed that she didn't actually believe that it could be a reality for her.
Oy vezmir.
Okay.
I'm still trying to get back to what the Rebbetzin said about Chazal tells in the Gemara that you shouldn't change, you shouldn't daven for a miracle. Okay, listen. You listening? Malachim come. It's Perek Yud Ches HaBereishis. The Malachim come and then say, oh yeah, sorry, Yishtacha. Everyone knows a very famous question. Talk about questions. Where sorry, right? There are some questions that are very important, even though they knew. They want to let Avram know, says Rashi, that is she Sanuahi, he neba ohal, she's in the tent, she's standing right there. Everyone can overhear. And the Malach says, Ka'es Chaya, Ulasar Ben. When I come back this time next year, when the sun is in the exact same place, Sarah will have a child. And Sarah hears, Vatitzchak Sarah Bekirba. And Sarah laughed, Bekirba. I'm not chanting that on purpose. Atonement. She said, "Acharei belosi v'haisali edna v'adoni zaken." Is it possible that after I'm all withered, it's not teva? It's exactly what the Rebbe just said. It's not teva. I'm all withered. I'm not in the way of women anymore. My husband is old. Now I'm going to have a child. Now we both show me. I have to wait till I was 90 to give me a child. So it seems like, in fact, she was not davening, and in fact, she is doubting. V'techachei Sarah, and Sarah doubts. She doesn't know. She's denying. So Hashem comes to Avram and it says, "Lama zetzacha kasara? Why did Sarah?" It doesn't matter if she's 90, it doesn't matter if you're 100, it doesn't matter if she's out of the way of woman. Hashem can change teva. So then they say to Sarah, why did you laugh? And she says, I didn't laugh, I was afraid. You did laugh. And this is the series. As soon as she denies laughing, the malachim get up and they leave. What's going on? So what did you say, Elisheva? Did Sarah, it seems like she didn't believe that Hashem could change the teva, right?
Well, it just seemed like from the words that she said that she was
quiet.
Okay, so Rav David Holzer explains what's going on here. Should we understand that righteous Sarah Imenu, Sarah who Avram Avinu, the Sarah who was above Avram in Nevuah, didn't believe that Hashem could give her children? How do we understand this? So Rav David Holzer explains something very important, and he says as follows, Vatitzchak Zar Bikir Ba. Who did Sarah laugh at? She wasn't laughing at the Ribbono Shel Olam. Doesn't really mean laugh. Doesn't doubt. She wasn't laughing. She didn't deny that God can do whatever he wants, because Ribbono Shel Olam can do whatever he wants, even give a 90-year-old woman a baby. She didn't doubt that. She doubted that she was able to rise to the tafket of the occasion. She wasn't denying the Ribbon Shalom. She was denying, in a sense, her own ability. And is it not true that every person, maybe not you, but many times we feel that we're in nisyonos that we cannot withstand? It's human nature. Hashem, it's too much. I can't do it. I don't have the kohos. I know you could do anything you want, Hashem, and you're the Ein Sof, but I cannot live up to this tafkid within myself. She laughed at herself, not laugh, doubted herself. So Hashem says, why did she laugh? So she says, I didn't laugh. Lo ki tzachakti, you did laugh. If you deny that you cannot fulfill your tafkid, in a sense, it means you deny Hashem. Because if Hashem gave you the tafkid, he knows you can do it. And if he knows you can do it, then you can do it. Then you have to do it. Then you have the kohos within yourself to live up to the task. So I'll relate this very, very nicely to the book of Bamidbar, which we are opening up this week. Bamidbar is known as Sefer HaPekudim. Sefer HaPekudim, the book of countings. It's interesting. Lashon, Pekudim, Pakad also means to remember. My husband heard this told over by Dr. Yoni Bindegar at Shal Shudas at Beis Mezrash Woodmere on Shabbos. Pakad also means to remember. Ayashwa Yosef as Echav Lemer. Yosef met his brother swear, saying, Pakod Yifkod Elokim Eschem Vahalisem Esatzmosa Mizeh. I promise you, Hashem will remember you. Take my bones out of here. So Pakad means to count. Pakad means to remember. And Pakad also means Tafkid, your assignment or your mission. What is the connection between all of these three words? Hashem assigns us, appoints us, counts us in for a certain tafkid. Pakad, he assigns to us a tafkid. And if you live up to your tafkid, that is how you will be remembered. Is it true? That's how persons are remembered, by their tafkid, by their contribution. So, Vatizchak Zar Bekirba, Achrei Belosi, I'm too old. It's not that God, who is Ein Sof from the beginning to end of time, can't change Teva. He could even give me three arms. He could even make a deaf child speak. It's totally Lamalim in a Teva. It should not be. My brother says he would tell his Talmidim in school, Nishmas, we say, Mesiach Ilmim. He makes the mute speak. We say that Hashem is going to do Tchias HaMesim. So if you tell people, Mesiach Ilmim, makes the mute speak, so they'll say, Hashem could do whatever he wants, but it's never going to happen. But we have seen it happen. So why did some people say, by Tchias HaMesim, Hashem could do whatever he wants, but we don't know if it's really going to happen. Hashem could change Teva. So Sarah doubted, not the Ribbono Shel Olam. Sarah doubted Sarah's ability to live up to a certain task. But that too is a slight lacking, because if Hashem gives me a tafkid, if he appoints me a certain tafkid, then I have to live up to that in order to be counted, in order to be remembered. Yeah.
But there are people that fail.
There are people that fail.
Why should Sarah be like, why should that be held against Sarah if she didn't think that she could withstand the nisayon? Because people do fail their nisyonos.
Because Hashem said she could do it.
Maybe, okay.
She was on a certain level, and Hashem said she could do it, so she had to do it. And perhaps also it's to teach us a very strong lesson, because we learn from the Abbas and the Imahos. And in fact, the very next words are, Vayikumi misham ha'anashim v'eshkifu al p'nei Sodom. We learn from here that the Shekhinah can't be in the presence of doubt. There is some measure, if you will, some frustration with her tafkid, and then the malachim get up and leave. It's to teach us. Okay, so what should we do?
Shavuot.
What?
Shavuot.
What do you mean? We should keep going? Like
Shavuot.
Shavuot. Shavuot.
I don't get
it. What should we do? Shavuot is next Wednesday, so... Is that what you were going with?
Yes. Yes.
5 minutes on Shavuot.
A little dress.
Oh, 5 minutes on Shavuot. Well, we already spoke about Lo Tachmod. You didn't email me to tell me about that. We already spoke about Lo Tachmod. Okay, so I'll tell you ha'ara. I'll share with you one nice ha'ara. Okay, you spoke about Tachmo, that's Shavuos. You spoke about Anochi Hashem Elkecha, remove your eye to recognize eye, that's Shavuos. The mitzvah of Anochi is the mitzvah of Emunah. This whole class is on Emunah. That's all Shavuos. So I'll tell you an interesting art. It was written in my weekly Dvar Torah. So if you read them, you're going to get it tomorrow. You don't blame me that you already saw it. I just wrote it this afternoon. So why do we have flowers? There's, by the way, when I was looking into it, it's very interesting. There's a lot of different reasons that we have flowers. Talking about the Avos and the Imahos, the story with the Dudaim between Rachel and Leah actually occurred on Erev Shavuos, and Yisachar, the tribe of Torah, was conceived on Shavuos, and to remember the Dudaim that they traded the knife for, you take my Dudaim, I'll get your husband tonight, Leah conceived Yisachar, and therefore, Chabad.org, yeah, very, very interesting, and therefore, to remember Yisachar, and the Dudaim, we put flowers. That's one reason. There's many different reasons. Moshe Rabbeinu was born on Zion. Adar 3 months later takes you to Sivan. He was cast into the reeds by the Nile River. To remember the reeds, we put greenery in our home. All different things. To remember Bikurim. Bikurim are bring up the first of your produce. To remember the first of your produce, you put greenery. But one thing that emerged that perhaps we could... So what did we do in the book? One paragraph? So perhaps one thing that emerged really interesting ha'ara is as follows. Why do we put up plants? By the way, the Vilna Gaon is against it. Very, very much. You give psak, you should absolutely not do it. 1700s Lithuania, Zuchus Hayagin Aleinu, the Gaon of Vilna, because he said, the Umos Ha'olam, the Gentiles put up greenery, going back to Hanukkah, oh my gosh. The Gentiles put up greenery for their holiday, their festivals, and their places, and therefore give psak that you should not put greenery. But the long-held custom is we don't pass in that way, and we do have greenery. So when you plant a seed, it looks like a little seed. It looks like such a speck of dirt. You could actually sweep it out with the dust. If you plant a bulb, it's nothing. And then you put it in the dark ground. Then you put it in the damp, damp, dark ground. And you have nothing to show for your efforts. Your knees are dirty, your hands are caked with soil, and you have nothing. And someone walks by and says, what do you do? And he says, I planted a flower. And they're going to say, you planted a flower? You have nothing there. And then a week later, it starts to break through the surface, and you see some green, and you say, wow, my thing's really growing. It's a little bit taller. And then after 14 days, you have one leaf becomes two leaf becomes three leaf. And after 21 days, you say, wow, it's a little bit higher. It's coming out of the earth and reaching up to heaven. And after 28 days, you see the little bud. And after 35 days, it starts to open. And after 42 days, you say, 6 weeks ago, I had a bulb in dirt, and now I have something that's blossoming. And 49 days later, you have the most beautiful flower. What is the mashal? That's the mashal. What's the nimshal? We're the nimshal. We're all that seed. We started out by Mitzrayim, Beit Mitzrayim. We were in the streets. We were in these terrible streets, the confines, this dirt, the tumah, the soil, the dust, the impurity, the darkness of Egypt. And Kosh Baruch Hu knew he implanted within us the desire to grow upward. Where does the plant grow? It sets down roots. We have to remember our roots, and we have to grow upward. And with water, Ein Mayim Ela Torah, and with light, light is Torah, the plant starts to grow up. And you turn back after those 7 weeks, Shavuos is weeks. The whole Yom Tov is called weeks. It's not called Zman Matan Torah. That's the appellation we give in our davening. It's called Shavuos because it's a reflection, says Rav Biederman, of the weeks that preceded it. And just like the flower starts as a seed that looks hopeless, inside there's life, and inside there's chiyus, and inside there's the desire to leave the soil to grow upward to the Ribono Shel Olam. So when we have the flowers in our home, we should really remember that that's the story of every Jew who's striving always to be better. We might start low, we might start in dirt, we might start all the way down in the impurity of Egypt, but 49 days later you have the most beautiful flower. And the Midrash says, when Hashem spoke the Aseres HaDibros, the whole world was filled with a beautiful scent. You have a flower that gives aroma. It's the scent of Torah. You have flower that gives light and beauty and excitement. And that's really what a human being is. We're growing out of the dirt. We're growing up. We're constantly striving, working on our emunah. That even when it looks hopeless, we never give up. We always love and can always emerge to be the most beautiful creation. Yes.
Very nice, beautiful.
So I wish you all a very meaningful, amuna-filled, uplifting, flower-filled Yom Tov, ladies, and a good Shabbos and a Chodesh Tov.